In the next segment, my co-host sat down with Citizen Action's Karen Scharf to talk about the upcoming primary election taking place in September, the importance of November's general election here in New York, and the work Citizen Action is doing.
Can you tell me a little bit about Citizen Action and the role that you play with the organization?
Sure. Citizen Action in New York is a statewide grassroots organization. We've got 8 chapters and affiliates in 8 regions across the state, from Buffalo across upstate, down the Hudson Valley, and then New York City and Long Island. And in all of our chapters and statewide, we work for economic, racial, social, and environmental justice, taking on critical issues facing our local communities, our state, and our country to try to make New York and the country and each of our regions a better place for ordinary New Yorkers to live and a place that's more where we can experience more democracy and more justice. And in all of those areas, we do our work by organizing ordinary New Yorkers to get active and get involved and have much more of a say in what happens in their community and in their state and country.
Citizen Action is a little bit different from some other nonprofits that work on progressive issues in that you actually do get involved in electoral campaigns. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. We definitely believe that we can't make the kind of transformational changes we want without having better people in office, people who are better representative of the needs of ordinary New Yorkers, low-income New Yorkers, working families, New Yorkers across the state in all kinds of communities, so that we have people in office who are not only representative, but who are willing to take on the most challenging issues of the day and try to really make a difference. And we also think it's really important that if someone's in office and is not doing a good job for their community, that there's accountability, that people are willing to run against them and vote them out of office. So we very much encourage challengers where we have incumbents who are not doing a good job for their district. And then we also support incumbents where we have somebody who's doing a really great job. And we found, you know, one of our leaders used to always say, you can't do politics 364 days a year and not do it the one day that the politicians care about, because the bottom line is people who are in office want to get reelected, and the only way you really get accountability is if you're willing to either help them get reelected or take them on and make sure they get kicked out of office if they're not doing the job.
What does that work look like on the ground?
We involve our members and also just grassroots activists in each of the regions in working on behalf of candidates that we endorse. We have a very in-depth endorsement process where we have candidates fill out a questionnaire that goes through all of the different issue areas that we care about, and also really look to see what are the candidates' core values and how are they looking at the world overall and what does it mean to them to fight for justice. Then our members do interviews and then make recommendations to our statewide board of directors, which makes the ultimate decisions on our state-level endorsements, or the local boards, which make decisions on local endorsements. And once we've endorsed, then we involve our folks in doing phone banks, going door to door, all of the things that people see that are on the grassroots side of campaigning. People are seeing, you know, every day now, volunteers from Citizen Action coming to their door on behalf of our candidates, whether it's Cynthia Nixon and Jamani Williams for governor and lieutenant governor, or some of our candidates for state senate. They're hearing from our members about why we're supporting those candidates and talking to them about why they should vote for them.
The election that's coming up in November, it's important. It's not just important on the national level at the top of the ticket for president, but also the control of our state senate here in New York is at play. What are some of the issues that are at stake depending on who controls the state senate?
You're right. It's a really critical election because, as you know, our state senate has been controlled by the Republicans, sometimes straight out, sometimes with the support and votes of the Independent Democratic Conference, which is a group of Democrats that chose to prop up Republican control instead of having Democratic control of the Senate. And people might hear this as kind of just an insider political thing, but the thing is that which party controls the state senate turns out to have an incredible impact on what policies are passed in New York State, which has an incredible impact on people's everyday lives. So, for example, in 2019, the issue of rent control in New York City will be coming back to the legislature, because New York has this crazy system where New York City doesn't get to make its own rules. The state gets to make the rules for New York City and for the other localities around the state. So the state legislature will decide whether or not tenants in New York City have any shot at having affordable housing, or whether it's going to continue to get more and more expensive and people are going to continue to get pushed out of their homes and out of their neighborhoods because of unaffordable housing. So New York City folks will come to the legislature next year in 2019, and tenants will be there to say, I can't afford my rent. You got to keep it from going up any higher. You need to preserve rent control and put in more controls. The landlords will be there saying, no, we need freedom to charge whatever we want, because, you know, that's capitalism and we get to make money off our property and we get to drive people out of their homes if we want to. And that will be a huge fight. And what we're seeing is those real estate interests who want nothing more than to charge more rent so that they can make more money and more money in their pockets are funding state senate campaigns outside of New York City, where these senators have they don't have any constituents who are going to be affected by this, but those senators are being funded, the Republicans and the independent Democrats are being funded by the big real estate interests from New York City in order to make sure that they have a Senate that will preserve the control of real estate and be unresponsive to the needs of ordinary tenants in New York City and around the whole rest of the state, because tenants around on the whole state, while we may not have rent control, we have lots of problems with lack of affordable housing. People literally cannot afford their rent in every part of New York State. So we'll have a huge fight in 2019 over housing justice, specifically rent control, but also tenant protections, evictions, all the kinds of things that affect tenants statewide. And if we have a Democratic-controlled Senate, especially one that has fewer, if we have a Senate that's accountable to voters and tenants, we will have strong housing justice laws passed. If we have a Senate that's still controlled by the Senate Republicans, we will have bad housing laws passed, and people will find that their rent is even more unaffordable. And that's like the one of the most blatant examples, because real estate is such a huge force in New York State politics and spends their money to get senators in office who will do exactly what they want, and they've succeeded. That's why we have unaffordable housing. That's why people can't afford the rent, because real estate has succeeded in electing people to the state Senate. So they succeeded in electing people who will protect their interest in making money rather than the interest of ordinary New Yorkers and having a place they can afford to live and make their rent off of their off of a normal salary. So that's going to be one issue that's very much at stake and very clearly going to come to the fore, because rent control laws expire next year and have to either get extended, improved, or weakened. We'll also see a big fight again over funding for our schools. This is an issue Citizen Action has worked on for decades now, where New York has one of the most inequitable funding systems for our public schools, where the rich school districts spend far more than the poor school districts. One of our biggest victories was in 2007, when we were able to work with Governor Spitzer and enact a new foundation aid formula that was based on equitable funding. Fortunately, Governor Cuomo has chosen not to implement that funding formula. So we still have unfair funding. We still have $4.2 billion. That's $4.2 billion owed to our public schools across the state. Most of it owed to schools in Black and brown communities, where there's just not the property tax base to pay for schools. And we really depend on the state for that funding.
So that's what you mean by equitable funding, is that some school districts are getting a tremendous amount of resources and other school districts in areas that don't have the tax base just don't have the money for textbooks, for facilities, for extracurricular activities. Is that what you mean?
That's exactly right. So New York State has our school systems funded by a combination of property taxes and state funds. And those districts that have a wealthy property tax base have a lot of money. And those districts that don't are entirely dependent, or almost entirely dependent, on the state to make up for what they don't have in a property tax base. And the state does do that, but doesn't do it anywhere near adequately. So it still leaves our public schools in the poorer communities, both rural and urban, significantly underfunded. And then they don't have the new textbooks, they don't have enough teachers, they don't have the kind of course offerings that a place like, you know, Scarsdale or Jericho or would have. So that's the kind we've been, you know, if we have a state Senate that's willing to really dig in and fight for equitable funding, we have a shot at getting it. If we have a state Senate that remains as is, will it continue to have inequitable funding in New York State? And again, that does also tie back, just like the housing fight ties back to campaigns, so does the education fight, because not only does it matter who's in there, but it also, many of the Republicans and independent, so-called independent Democrats, are funded by the big Wall Street and hedge fund donors who don't want to see New York raise taxes on the rich to pay for its schools.
Another thing that we're seeing with this election is more women and more people of color running for office across the country. What are you seeing on the ground here in New York?
Yeah, I'm seeing a huge amount of excitement over that exact fact. People are really excited to see more women and people of color running, and they're especially excited to see people running who come out of our communities and who really are running to be in either in Albany or Washington in order to represent the needs of average, ordinary New Yorkers, not the kind of special interests we've been talking about. And I'm seeing a couple things in relation to that. Definitely seeing the excitement, and definitely seeing a lot of energized volunteers who want to see people elected. And seeing, also seeing for the first time in a serious way, these candidates, both women and people of color, being able to raise grassroots money, because one of the big barriers to women and people of color for running is the fact that our campaign finance system is so expensive. And if you don't have money or have access to money, it's hard to be able to afford a campaign. And that's one of the other big things we want to change next year. If we have a Democratic Senate, we hope to create pass a serious democracy agenda that improves voting rights and the campaign finance system, so that everybody can raise money through small donations and public matching funds and be able to run. And that would make a huge difference for the candidates we're supporting this year if they had those public matching funds and didn't have to rely on trying to find rich donors in addition to their small donors. But we are seeing a lot of small donor response, a lot more money being raised from small donors, enabling people who are not wealthy to run and to be able to fund their campaigns. And we're also seeing incredible excitement among both the volunteers and the candidates about the kind of issues I'm talking about, fighting for housing justice, fighting for economic justice, fighting for a democracy agenda, including campaign finance reform, and fighting for our schools. And also, the one other issue I hadn't mentioned that we're seeing a lot become very active in the campaigns is the issue of mass incarceration and ending mass incarceration, and the link of that to all the other issues that we're talking about. We've talked a lot about the need to invest in schools, not jails, and that's something that we're hearing seeing a lot of candidates and a lot of grassroots volunteers really committed to. We're also seeing some backlash, honestly. The people in power don't want to see new people running for office, don't want to see people that are not controlled by special interests, don't want to see people that are really going to represent ordinary New Yorkers get elected. And we're definitely seeing candidates, establishment candidates, using, in usually subtle but sometimes not so subtle ways, sexism and racism to turn voters against some of these new candidates who are running who are women and people of color. We saw it in my congressional district right now, where John Faso, my congressman, who has, you know, over and over again voted in favor of the wealthy specialists, not the constituents in his district, not me and my neighbors, by taking away our health care and other things that he's done that have been really detrimental to the average working person in the district. He's trying to hide that by going after his opponent by using coded language around race. Antonio Delgado, who's a Democratic candidate who we support, who's fantastic, and who has spoken to every one of the issues we're talking about and spoken about how he's going to bring change to Congress. Instead of taking on those issues, having a real debate, talking about what he stands for, John Faso has tried to turn voters against Antonio by saying he's not one of us. And that language is that typical coded racism, trying to say to white voters in the district, he's not white, so don't vote for him. And that's the incredible reactionary politics that we're seeing in reaction to some of these amazing new candidates. We're even seeing it in the lieutenant governor's race, where we have Sirmani Williams, who we're supporting for lieutenant governor, African-American, strong activist on issues of housing and ending mass incarceration. And again, the lieutenant governor right now, instead of taking him on those issues and talking about the things that he's talking about or trying to defend her own bad record of having a very high rating, from 100% rating from the NRA when she was in Congress, and when she was a county clerk, she was the person who killed one of the leaders of the effort to kill driver's license for immigrants. Instead of speaking to her bad record and the things that Jumaane has fought for, she's attacking Jumaane for being a struggling working class person, just like so many New Yorkers, is running ads, attacking her opponent because he started a small business, and like so many small businesses, it didn't make it, and he still owes money on that. She's going after him for that. That's what happens to people in New York and in America right now, because the economy is so rigged against so many of us. When people start a small business, it's tough. Some people make it, and that's great. A lot of people struggle, don't make it. We're glad they tried, but the fact that they didn't succeed doesn't mean they shouldn't run for office and represent us in Albany and be able to try to fix the very problems that they face. And Jumaane is a man who understands what it's like to struggle, what it means to not have the money to get your small business off the ground, what it means to struggle to have to pay your bills because you're living on a working person's salary. Unfortunately, our lieutenant governor doesn't understand that and is using a very elitist and, I think, underlying racist argument to attack him rather than actually debating the real issues people want to hear about. So we are seeing that kind of backlash on race and gender, and I hope we'll overcome it. I hope we'll see the women and people of color candidates that are running this year win and show that doesn't work anymore.
What can you tell our listeners about what's coming up? What are some of the deadlines they need to pay attention to with regard to this election, and what can they do?
So first of all, people who are not registered to vote definitely need to register to vote. This is an election where every vote is going to count. We're going to have a lot of very close races for Congress, very close races for state Senate, and possibly very close races for our statewide offices. For those people who are registered in a party, the primary is September 13th, and if people want to vote in the Democratic primary in any of the races we've been talking about, they need to register by August 19th in order to vote on September 13th. So that deadline for voter registration is coming up very soon. People need to go to their Board of Elections and register. And the other thing I should point out in that is the primary is September 13th, which is a little odd. It's a Thursday this year, not a Tuesday. So people need to remember to vote on September 13th, which is a Thursday. And so I really encourage people to register to vote. If you're not registered, if you are registered, mark September 13th in your calendar. If you're a Democrat, make sure you go out and vote in that primary. And then, of course, the general election in November, everybody needs to register and vote.
That was Karen Scharf of Citizen Action talking to me about New York's primary election on September 13th and the general election in November. Just a reminder and to reiterate as a public service announcement from the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, in order to vote in the very important September primary election, your voter registration application has to be postmarked no later than August 19th and received by the Board of Elections no later than August 24th. These are for new registrations only. Unless you're a new voter, you can't change your party affiliation in order to vote in any primary at this point in the election season. And of course, it's important to remember that the September primary will be held on Thursday, September 13th, and polls are open that day from noon to 9 p.m.
One of the things you can do if you are a registered voter in one of the parties holding a primary but not going to be in town that day, you can apply for an absentee ballot. But that concludes our show. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm Mark Dunlight.
And I'm Corinne Carey. Remember to tune back in tomorrow and every weekday from 7 a.m., 9 a.m., and 6 p.m. to get your daily dose of local news. You can also get that dose through our Hudson Mohawk Magazine podcast and Facebook page. If you have comments, suggestions, or the sudden urge to express your gratitude, you can text us at 518-888-3004. Also, be sure to tune in 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights for Jazz Sanctuary, a wonderful celebration of all that is creative, dedicated to supporting jazz in the Hudson Mohawk region.